Let's see, it was an accident that took place right out of Roswell using a B-29, two B-29 accidents that resulted in, you know, fatal crashes. And we were wondering if maybe over time people were beginning to, you know, think in terms of those fatal accidents, which essentially scattered body parts, small parts, you know, over areas where people were beginning to confuse what occurred in those aircraft accidents with the sensationalism of this UFO story.
As I said in my letter, we, all of us, went back to NYU on the 8th of July, and we heard about that afternoon, and we just thought it was one of our balloons, and all of us that were in that group have held on to that view for a long time. So, let's see, I do have Crow's letter here, and he apparently joined us in for that Operation Sandstone pickup crew in 48, but he knew that we thought that the Roswell incident, so-called, was caused by one of our balloons.
Did you ever have any, did anyone ever mention it to you once you returned? Did any of the Red Bank folks mention it to you, or even in passing, or told you that maybe you better tighten up your procedures or anything of that nature, or a memo?
I have no memory. I do think that Peoples had the idea that it was one of our balloons, and it wasn't a matter of tightening up our procedures. It was just one of our balloons we couldn't recover. And as you'll see, looking at Cray's diary, there was no frantic effort to recover the earlier flights, even though they had microphones on them. I read to you one about some equipment had been stolen by the time it got there, and as you can see, there was no in the diary, there's no record that there was any major problem.
So even though the equipment was taken, there was no shroud of secrecy. The MPs didn't come out and close down the area or anything of this sort.
No, not at all.
It was just expected in the normal course of research.
Expendable equipment.
And you had no fear that it was going to be taken by enemy agents or.
No, the biggest fear was thought of loose talking, and we very well just didn't talk about the purpose of this. We certainly did talk a lot about our balloons, and there was just no security or no concern. We were flying constant level balloons. It was
for pressure and temperature.
For meteorological trajectories.
Okay.
A lot of interest in trajectories. One thing I should mention is that after I had a visit from William Moore around 80 or 81, I wrote Roe Peoples, and at that time Jim Peoples was in the geology department at the University of Kansas. I wrote him and got a letter back from Roe Peoples saying that he had died. And so I wrote her back and said that there was considerable interest still in this Roswell incident. And did he ever get called out? I do know that on occasion he got involved in classified things and left us. And I asked her, did he have any? Did he ever talk to her about anything regarding this debris that had been recovered? And her letter, which I perhaps can find somewhere, was the fact that no, he thought the flying saucers were a bunch of hooey, and he had a very low opinion of people who believed in flying saucers. I did get a letter back from Roe, essentially to the response that he had not been, as far as she knew, he had not been involved in any classified identification or something. That had occurred to me that things could have gone on that I had no need to know, and I tried to extract that.
So you had no recollection or strong recollection of him when you got back to New Jersey discussing it. Hey, it caused a lot of fuss. Can't, you know.
I I'm really surprised at this newspaper story, because implicit in this is the idea that someone provided a good cover for us, and yet Curry's diary doesn't show that he was involved in it, and I wasn't aware that my contact, Dyved, was privy enough to our operations to have carried this out. So this is a bit of a mystery to me.
What does that indicate? What would you speculate? How would someone have...
Just the circumstances, coincidence, or intentional?
It's very clear that it's intentional, and there was a better security operation going on than I appreciated at the time. That would be my assessment.
So you believe that someone was privy to your activities and...
Trakowski was there. I had forgotten, but he reminded me that he'd gone on the C-54 to pick up the helium at Amarillo. And I asked Trakowski, had he been involved in manufacturing a coverage story? And he kept saying how important Mogul was, how highly classified it was, and how he was really wheeling and dealing. He apparently went down to Fort Bliss to the commanding general there, and I guess he was a captain at the time, and I had no trouble talking the general into releasing something like, maybe several hundred 500-pound bombs for this. But at the same time, Trakowski has no memory of a cover-up. Gave me no memory of a cover-up.
No, he didn't have participation.
And whether he was on that C-54 that had 23 people on it or not, I don't know. Crary's list of the people left, there was only one military type of Lieutenant Thompson in what you have here.
So while you were operating out there, that's my next question. Exactly who did you report to?
Peoples.
And then getting back to when we were talking about quarters and things like that, did you have to go introduce yourself to the commanding officer at the base, or...
That's a surprising thing, Lieutenant. As far as I know, we just never interfaced with the military.
And that brings to the next question. Where were you actually operating from?
We operated out of the north area of Alamogordo Army Airfield. That's this hangar right here, which was a big wooden hangar on the south side of the ramp in the north area.
And that was arranged by Peoples?
Crary was already resident there. When we arrived.
That's right. He had arrived first to establish the ground stations first.
That's correct. And he had been doing, as you'll see in this, he was already firing explosives for the GR-6, GR-8, the various sound ranging microphones.
Did he have a cover story for those ground explosions and the microphones?
I don't know. I mean, we just... there were very few enlisted men on the airfield. As Trakowski said, it was about to be closed. And the main people there was a motor pool, because in the stuff Todd has dug up, there are a bunch of weapons carriers being requisitioned. And we certainly had some brand new good ground transportation that were just turned over to us. We civilians were driving weapons carriers to carry our helium around and to go into town to get meals, etc.
So you operated from Alamogordo Army Airfield.
You did
not operate out of White Sands.
That is correct.
There's a difference.
Very strong schism between the ordnance people across the valley, 50-odd miles at the proving ground, and the Army Air, the skeleton group at Alamogordo Army Airfield.
There weren't many people at Alamogordo.
That's correct. The main people I have in memory were the people operating what sticks in my mind is either a C-5 or an M-5 radar. I knew the signal corps designation, the SCR 584s and 270s, etc. But this was some new radar that had a bigger dish on it and was on the north side of the ramp. Over. This is looking toward the south, and our hangar. That's just that. I can show you. Well, you can see here. Those are some old abandoned.
That's these here.
That's correct. Those are some were barracks used to handle air crew during training in World War II, and they were all closed and dusty, and we didn't use them. We were in barracks down somewhere on the main base.
Okay.
But we were just in enlisted men barracks down on the main base, and there was a mess hall that we ate lunch in, and I ate our meals. And we were up at odd hours, as you can see, these 3 o'clock launchings.
So who did Alamo Gordo report to? You indicated with Fort Bliss?
No, there was a commanding officer, and I'm not sure which command he was in, but the people in the north area were all, if you will, tenants. We didn't use that word, but we were all associated one way or another with Watson Labs.
So Tchaikovsky then, his reporting chain was, again...
His reporting chain was Watson Lab to Colonel Duffy. And I don't know if you have...
There was no real interface. Tchaikovsky had no real interface with the Alamogordo people or anyone else around 8th Air Force.
Other with some fancy orders that gave him a position to talk to the commanding officer and get what he wanted, to arrange what he wanted on the basis of orders out of Headquarters Air Force, Army Air Force.
Okay. While you were operating, doing your procedures, did it like a security monitor type person or security officer come by and just say, "I just want to see how you're"? Not at all.
No interface with
no
CIC or
no interface at all.
You don't remember any strangers poking around or
no CIC? No, just absolutely nothing. We were just a little bunch of civilians there on a almost deserted base, doing what we wanted.
Going back to the orders that you mentioned. Were these some sort of special orders different from what we would typically see as military orders?
You have to talk to Tchaikovsky on it, but the answer is my opinion is that he had orders that came from fairly high level that really let him that introduced him and let him do what he wanted to. As the research changed, he didn't have to go back and get new orders. He was in a position of doing what Crary and people wanted.
I mean, like Jim and I have blanket orders that say we're authorized to go anywhere, you know, essentially in the world. But was there anything specific in those orders that would said provide all assistance requested?
I suspect so.
Okay, but
I too have had such general orders go do as someone may deem necessary. In fact, I have a copy of my 1944 orders that say such things here, but you have to talk to Tchaikovsky. My feeling is that he and Peoples provided the interface to the base, and we just weren't bothered. We didn't. You're quite right. We just never saw anybody with security, and there was certainly nobody keeping us secure. If anything, we were keeping ourselves secure.
You were going to bring up something about this photo.
Yeah, I just wanted to. These are the pictures that were taken by the taken in General Rainey's office, 8th Air Force Headquarters, by a news photographer
John.
Fort Worth Star-Telegram.
Right.
And it's four pictures that show various people with some equipment. And I'd just like to know what you believe that equipment to be.
Joe Fletcher has written your friend Todd and said there's no question that's a target. And... the only question is that there are people who allege that this is a target that's been substituted for the real debris, and there's also stories where Marcel said the picture in which he appears are the real stuff, etc. That looks very much like our radar targets, and you'll notice that this does look more aluminum foilish than what I have here. And it's my memory that there was good bright aluminum metal foil, not painted stuff. On the targets we were using, and that resembles that looks like more than one target to me in the various pictures, and that looks like the stuff we were flying.
So I think they talked in terms of being a Raywin target here in this book, isn't that right, Jim? They talked about a Raywin.
Right, they taught a Rollins song.
Raywin it's just radio wind. There are two kinds of radio winds. The 400 megacycle transmitters tracked by the SCR 658, the old bed springs, and then the radar wind, Raywind is the right way to say it.
So the Raywind would be a radar target that most of the officers and the weather people there would have been associated, they would have some knowledge of. They would not have had association with the Raywind.
Hit the head. But the answer is not really.
Okay.
As I say, these came out right at the end of the war. There is a warrant officer. I don't know. I have a letter that he wrote Todd. I don't know if you've seen it.
No.
But we'll aim to take
care
of it.
Sir,
we got this thing narrowed down to just a few flights. There couldn't have been, you know, due to your time frame, when you were there, the rancher got on the record as saying he picked it up on the 14th or 15th.
14th.
So it would have to be in the June field trip, early in June. And if we could, you had several service flights, but you also had the, you call them experimental flights? The experimental flights with the testing different?
Well, these the ones prior, in the early June, were all service flights. In other words, all flights we were making to for Peoples, and we had some radar test flights, if you want that.
So to go with the June 14th date,
correct.
What type of flight do you think would have?
All of the balloons launched in that period would have been meteorological balloons, 350 gram meteorological balloons, some of them with radar targets and just to test the radar out, and some of them with sono. I'd forgotten all about it, but Query's diary says we had sonobuoy microphones on some of them. And so that black box that Cabot said really begins to get my attention.
That would not be a radio song.
That would not be a radio song.
What would a radio song look like?
Equipment.
It wouldn't be.
Well, it'd be a white, usually a cardboard or plastic box. And as the fact that we were involved in radar is because we weren't allowed to have our radio sound equipment. We didn't. We weren't all set up for that.
You said you didn't bring it with you.
We didn't bring the receiver. Well, that is right. I have to correct myself. We did attach radio sounds to them, to the flights carrying microphones, because there's a statement in this summary here of radio sound reception, radio sound recording. So I take back. Yes, we had radios on, but we did fly this one mentioned here. Let's see. This one mentioned on June 4th, out to Tularosa Range, no balloon fight again on account of clouds. By that he means no, none of their flights. Then flew regular sonobuoy mic on a cluster of balloons and had good luck on receiver on ground, but poor on plane. So
I noticed that early on you were going ahead with a Navy stock sonobuoy while Professor Ewing was trying to perfect his technique of the lone range.
That's correct.
Frequency microphone.
Of the low frequency microphone.
Low frequency, yeah.
Right. That's correct. So
he was experimenting with both AM and FM. Is that your recollection?
Well, it was actually in the laboratory, devices for measuring low-frequency acoustic waves were well-known, but what he was attempting to do is to modify these and devise something that could be a throwaway microphone and radio transmitter. And so this was to build an instrument for a certain purpose.
Okay.
And he actually had a fellow named Joe Johnston. You'll come across his name. Joe Johnston was the electrical engineer at Columbia, whose name will come up as the person who did these.
But you think in these early service flights you did have drop zone or
Initially we had
sonobuoys.
We had sonobuoys, according to Query, and we initially were flying radar targets on the balloons only, and then by about flight five, we'd had sufficient lack of result that we began putting radio sounds on. Just in Seguin, Washington, a couple weeks ago. I wish I'd known that.
finishing company in New York. This looks like one of them. What did he prefer you not give us copies of all this information? Or just...
Right, things were. He's dug up the things with Colonel Duffy, and he wants to be sure that they don't get released to the other UFO buffs or the UFO buffs. I think he's not one under freedom of information. So I think he's willing to have it transferred to you as a private communication.
I see.
I think Colonel Weaver promised that he could arrange it so that it would not come under freedom of information disclosure. Which may be odd for Todd to be asking, but I thought you'd find that of some interest.
Well, the end report that we're going to write is going to be based on official records and essentially transcripts such as this. So there'll be a lot of things like Cabot's tape, the transcript will not be part of that. This statement,
but the summary will.
The statement will be.
Can I make a suggestion? If you remember, there was a note in there from Dave Atlas to Colonel Duffy, a copy of a letter, I think, there. And Dave mentioned somewhere or another that Colonel Duffy took him down in his basement, and he had large amount. Colonel Duffy had trunkfuls of documents that were unclassified. I wonder if it would be possible for you to contact Mrs. Duffy, who
presumably... I was wondering about what she might have.
Well, I think she may have a great deal, and maybe in the Duffy file, I have the address and phone number.
This shows Annapolis as being the location.
No, I think it's Barrington, Connecticut,
Rhode Island.
I think.
He lived in Annapolis, and he moved to Rhode Island later.
Somewhere in here, I have printed out
Barrington,
for you.
Rhode Island, yes.
Somewhere I've printed off that address and phone number for you.
That was in the listing, sir?
Yes, that's in that's in the listing, and it's also
that in the folder of the listing,
yes,
of all the points.
Yes, I did. While the lieutenant's looking at that, you may be interested. Here's a letter that Todd got having to do with chasing down modern targets. The people who now make targets, who know nothing, just for your information, who know nothing about this earlier affair.
Yes, we talked with the Signal Corps up at Fort Monmouth, and that's where we got the copy of the engineering drawing, which is a copy for you.
Would it be I'd like very much to see one.
That's a copy for you. They said that these targets are no longer made if, you know, they have a national stock number, and they can be made, but they would have to go out and, you know, write a new contract for them.
If you are interested in one, I have two.
Well, sir, if you don't mind providing one.
I can ship it to you so you can... Let's see, that's the C. This is the Model C. And it... doesn't show the reinforcements.
No,
glue in place before wood supports are mounted.
It's not as specific as we had hoped. Now, you said that's a C model?
This is a C model.
The young lady I talked with at Fort Monmouth had indicated that this drawing predated that time frame. Now, let me look at the date. June of 44.
June of 44. June of 44,
yes, sir.
I'll be darned.
Which, you know, that was kind of, I found that unusual when she said that was June of 44, and I didn't pick up on there being the designation there printed on the side, because I thought that, you know, the B model was a 1947 vintage, and, you know, assumed, wrongly so, that the C model would come later.
Well, thank you. This then is really
So they didn't change the numbers. It does show the little swivel there, 44. Well, as always, my memory can be improved. Tibbetts, the radar lieutenant working for Fletcher, said that when they got these in 44, they were in a lot of trouble with breakage in the air, and they had to go back for reinforcement.
And that's where maybe the tape came in?
And he said that's where the tape came in. Because it certainly doesn't show...
It doesn't show this,
and I have a... There's just no question in my memory, bad as it may be, that there was a tape there, and that impels me to drag out Herbert Crowe's letter. While I'm finding that, here is a communication between Crowe and the warrant officer Newton, between Todd and the warrant officer Newton, who identified things in General Ramey's office.
This is a material like Mylar. Do you recall or have any knowledge of when that term came into use? Mylar is a polyethylene, but it's a metallized polyethylene.
It's not really polyethylene, sir. It's a polyterpylene.
Okay, I'm not a chemist.
It's really quite a different thing. We certainly got involved with Mylar balloons in General Mills around 1950 or 51.
But nothing that early, though.
But I think not. It was really quite a new plastic. As you can see, it's Mylar. And as you can see from the appearance, it's really quite different than polyethylene. It's non-extensible, whereas this is really stretches,
right.
and this scatters light, and this doesn't. We have flown Mylar balloons, and Mylar balloons vacuum coated with aluminum, but I think we didn't fly any in this era. It'd be my guess that someone's sort of confusing this with later things. There were a lot of Mylar balloons carried on rockets, and it was called Gemsphere. There was someone named Jim who came up with an idea of increasing the turbulence around a falling sphere by putting little protuberance, little cones out on it, and that was Gemsphere. And a lot of them were flown to measure winds in the low ionosphere, flown on rockets from White Sands, and they could well have fallen. But to my memory, it'd been anachronistic. It's out of time.
It's another photo of the material.
Who's that guy with him?
This is the warrant officer, Irving Newton.
He is the weather, the actual weather person. Right. That rain brought in.
I never saw that picture.
Well, I can furnish you with a bunch of this stuff. Here's a letter to me from Herbert Crow, who was one of my technicians in the 1948 operation. These pictures you saw, including that debris, are pictures that he sent to me with that letter, or in a subsequent letter. Yeah, these are pictures taken by Crow.
Did Alamogordo become Holloman?
Probably about September of 47.
Okay.
September. Is that a 48 picture?
Well, I was just wondering because the...
That's HAFB?
It says HAFB on the back of the truck.
Those pictures were taken, let's see, this picture you can see, there's no question that's HAFB. Those were taken during the Sandstone operation in April 48. That whole reel of his pictures were taken.
I take it the sidearm was for protection against rattlesnakes?
Good question.
You know, some of the people, the popular writers, have alleged that certain persons were turned away by, you know, armed guards and et cetera.
Not in our area.
I mean, as far as the so-called Roswell incident.
Out at the ranch. It's getting toward lunchtime, gentlemen. Would you like to?
Well, could we treat you for lunch?
We'll treat you. I'm glad to have somebody come take you, but we probably need to take you to a local restaurant, shall we?
Sure.
Are you open?
Yes,
I think so.
Going east of Roswell, I think it's pretty clearly Flight 5. Look and see if there's not a July 5 flight. I mean June 5 flight.
Yep, east. Say, we'll get the IRS. Don't give it to us. They have waves.
Oh, thank you. Well, if they go through as thoroughly as you've gone through cross-checking me here, I'll be in trouble.